It is Saturday, May 3rd, 2008. It's 10:08 on the Central Coast of California. Today on Geek Speak, the week in geek news. And we'll speak with Patrick Nugent about the newly released Toast 9. And later in the hour, we'll take your calls.
The bandwidth for geekspeak.org is provided by GNI, gnihosting.com.
Welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gaps between geeks and the rest of humanity. I'm your host, Timothy Jordan, filling in for Lyle Troxell. Please keep in mind that the views expressed during Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KUSP. Monday morning on Talk of the Bay in 1960, Jack Kerouac spent 6 weeks in Big Sur and produced what some consider his most powerful novel. Filmmaker Kurt Warden talks to KUSP's Robert Pulley about a new film chronicling Kerouac's time on the Central Coast, featured at the Santa Cruz Film Festival Monday morning at 10 a.m. on Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP. Welcome to Geek Speak. In the studio with me are some of our regular geeks. We have Ben Jaffe, Chancellor of Tech Issues.
Thank you, Timothy.
Ryder Brooks, Support Engineer for Sun Microsystems.
Good morning, Timothy.
And Miles Elam, a defier of all labels.
Good morning.
Yes, I heard last week's show, I have to admit. Geeks, welcome to Geek Speak.
Glad to be here.
Glad to be here.
Well, I'm glad you're all here as well. Now that we have those introductions out of the way, it's just a fantastic day, and I am pleased as punch to be talking about technology with you gentlemen. And I think we should hop right into it, don't you think? Let's begin with some news. Ryder, it's you with something about that persistent island in the Northern Caribbean region that is no longer the enemy of modern stuff.
Yeah, well, Cuba can now, you can go into a store if you are a Cuban resident and buy a personal computer.
Really?
Yes, really.
You can buy a computer?
You can buy a computer. There have been a lot of restrictions under that Cuban island under Fidel Castro. He fell ill recently, and he's resigned, and his brother Raul Castro has taken over, and he's lifted all sorts of bans, including day-to-day people being able to buy a personal computer legally. There has been a black market for personal computers, but now you can go in to a computer store and buy one. They're kind of expensive. They're kind of the price targets are regulated towards what it was going for on the black market. So right now you could buy a PC for just a little under $800 US. That's basically, you know, pretty low-powered computer, Intel Celeron with 80 gigabytes of memory, of hard drive space, and half a gig of RAM with Windows XP. And, apparently probably some embargo issues still with, you know, having XP on there since that's U.S. software. But, it's exciting for people there. You know, they don't have to kind of go to sketchy routes to get things they want. And oddly, there's all sorts of other things that they can now buy, like DVD players, motorcycles, plug-in pressure cookers, for example. So modern kitchen appliances have been off limits in Cuba. So
yeah, and that's the rating incredible for Cuba, as we learned from the movie Sicko, is just below the U.S. in terms of the quality of healthcare, even though it's national healthcare. So I'm wondering if the embargo will bump them up above us, or the lifting of the embargo.
Interesting, because their healthcare system is so good. As far as functionally, it just doesn't have all the equipment it needs.
Now, this isn't lifting a trade embargo. This is just internal Cuban bans.
So now they can purchase things.
They can buy things from their own government, in their own economy.
Goodness.
However they acquire them, they're not getting it from us.
It's just so strange to imagine technology being illegal in that way.
You know, considering how far away, you know, I mean, or how close they are to the U.S., mm-hmm. you know, it's just, what are they, 12 miles?
Or, yeah.
No, it's a little more than that, isn't it?
Yeah, I believe it's a bit more than that.
A little bit more, like 64 miles, under 100 miles, though.
It's raftable.
It definitely raftable.
Well,
it's been done.
It's been done, but it's been then done. Again, yeah.
I wouldn't want to do it.
Making trips to the Antarctic. You know, circle has been done. Yes. I wouldn't want to do it on a, you know, without.
But these are pretty radical changes for Cuba. I mean, you know, the Cuban government controls more of 90% of their economy. So mm-hmm. I mean, so and average, you know, Cubans make what, $20 a month. Yeah. So
hence the title of the government being communist.
Well, yeah. Yes.
Well, let's move on, Ben. I'd like to talk to you about robots and music. I have a question for you. Are we going to be graced by the Mozart 2000 here soon, or beleaguered with the Beethoven 01 Beta?
I love your lines, Timothy. So what Timothy is trying to say is Osimo, Honda's
Osimo?
Humanoid.
Is that how you pronounce it?
Yes, I just looked it up. Osimo. And, you know, maybe that's wrong. Actually, no, that's probably wrong. That's
better than what I was thinking.
That's probably a joke. You're obnoxious. But anyway.
I love you, too.
No,
Osimo.
Come on.
Whatever, however you pronounce it, A-S-I-M-O, Honda's robot, 51-inch tall robot, it's a humanoid. And it is preparing, it says in the article, to conduct the Detroit Symphony Orchestra in a performance of Impossible Dream. And it will be conducting Yo-Yo Ma included on May 13th. And it'll be interesting. Though I have issues with the way the article is written. As if the robot is preparing to conduct the orchestra on his own. What's probably in reality happening is it's being programmed with, you know, very specific timings of the song and giving an algorithm to work that out. But so in other words, what I was talking to Ryder about earlier is if this robot were to conduct a middle school band instead of the Detroit Symphony Orchestra, it wouldn't be able to adapt to changes in the band. The band would have to adapt to it, and that's what professional musicians do, and that's not what high school musicians do or middle school musicians do. So
what you're saying is that although it may be able to conduct an orchestra that's not going to make any errors, there's no way that it could learn or make intelligent decisions if something goes wrong,
certainly.
Which is what a conductor's most of his job is for.
Is the ebb and flow of the music and controlling that being the...
So it's a big publicity stunt, basically.
Exactly.
Yeah. I like publicity.
I mean, this is analogous to, you know, teaching it to teach middle school math, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it can follow a script, but as soon as, you know, a student asks a question or...
Exactly, and that's most of a teacher's job is to adapt.
Well, it's a good thing I'll still have a career to go to after I'm done with this whole school thing.
I don't think you're in any danger now.
All right, well, let's move on. That was very interesting. I have to say that I'm a little concerned about robots making music or not making music, but it doesn't sound like we're really in danger of any legitimate attempt.
No attacks right now.
Okay. Miles, let's turn to you. Something about Stormy Bots. That's what I got from what you were saying earlier.
Well, there's that story. I actually have another story that I'd prefer to do first.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Well, fine.
And as usual for me, it's political. This is having to do with the White House press reporter Helen Thomas. Now, the geek story isn't about the fact that she was calling the administration on whether or not we torture or not and whether their public comments have contradicted former statements. That's, you know, that's the regular news that I'm sure you will hear on NPR. What the portion that I want to talk about is the fact that the online community has now latched onto this, a site in particular, a news aggregator known as Reddit. And because they appreciated her contribution with the Fourth Estate, or basically acting as the Fourth Estate and that many reporters are or journalists are abdicating their responsibility in the White House press corps, in my own humble opinion, of course, they offer to buy her flowers. And so you have the blob of the internet, I guess, or the cloud of the internet, as you might think, having appreciation for her efforts and sending somewhere between $3,000 and $4,100, depending upon reports, worth of flowers to her office as a sign of gratitude for her actions.
That's a lot of flowers.
That's a lot of flowers.
Are you showing
her office?
An image around? Is that what you're doing? That's a lot of flowers.
And it's just, this is a change. You never really heard about anything like this before, where you heard people having email campaigns, or you might hear about someone, a story being told on the TV or radio and people sending checks, but never so much in the way of, there wasn't any mass media blitz about it. There wasn't anything on NBC about it. It was simply a group of folks seeing the clip and that have never met each other, coordinating in this way as an accident of reading the same site.
Mm-hmm. That's really excellent. I mean, the power of the internet, the work of what we've gotten used to with social networks and all that sort of thing, it seems like in this way it's really paying off.
Right. So I'll
in
put
the,
up
in real life.
Right. I'll put up links on the show page a little bit after the show regarding one, pictures of the event, but also links to the site that had this, the story, what brought it on, and then the original story, why people were so appreciative.
That's excellent. Flowers for legitimacy.
Mm-hmm.
I appreciate that.
But geeky flowers for
geeky legitimacy. Flowers for legitimacy. You are listening to Geek Speak. My name is Timothy Jordan, filling in for Lyle Troxell. With me in the air room are the geeks, Ben, Ryder, and Miles. So we have time for one or two more stories before we move to our interview of the day with Patrick Nugent. Let's see, who do I choose? I'd really like to hear, I think this is a quick one, is it not, Ryder? This college keyboard prank of corporate proportions, if you will.
Sadly, it's not a prank. It's actually happened. In the UK, Dell has a laptop line called the Vostro, and they have the 1310 and the 1510 model laptops. Haven't heard if it's all of them or a limited number of them, but apparently they really screwed up on the laptop layout. And the bottom row where you have your ZXCV key layout, they had it shifted all one key to the right with a new key inserted and an oversized shift key, the backslash. So basically just messing up any touch typist from being able to use their keyboard. And this is apparently some sort of OEM manufacturing error. And it's kind of a trip. You can look it up online, and they have pictures of it. And you know, to start off with, you know, the UK keyboard layout is ever slightly different on the top. Mm-hmm. You know, they have pound key. Their ampersand symbol is replaced with a double quote. So you know, at first glance, you may not think it's any weirder than looking at some of the other keys. But that is apparently a monumental flaw, and they're basically going to be sending out kits for people to replace their laptop keyboard. You can just pop it off. It's relatively simple.
But you hit the C key and you actually get an X on your screen. Is that what's going on? Or is it just in the wrong place?
If you were to type your X key, which is under the S and the D, you would get the Z instead. So okay. Everything is shifted to the right one.
Goodness.
Yes.
You know, I remember doing that. The reason I mentioned college keyboard prank is that I did that with my keyboard in college because I knew that I didn't have to look. And that way, my housemates or anybody that visited our apartment couldn't use my computer because, you know, the keys were all in the wrong place.
Well, I personally touched by sight, but I'm sure it would still mess me up pretty badly.
Sounds so much like Rot 13 encoding. It doesn't actually encode, but it can dissuade the casual observer.
Yeah.
Yeah. So... You know, it happened.
Okay, it happened, and that's where we're at. All right, Ben, I would love to hear about you and your base 10 explorations of the morning.
Oh, Timothy. Okay, so...
Don't be so auditory with your disappointment. I like you.
You have to make him explain this now.
Yeah, okay, so base 10 and base 2. So people... count in most people, some geeks don't, but most people count in base 10, which means one, you know, you go 1 through 10 and then we basically loop back and we get 11, which is 10 and 1, 21, 31, 41. Base 2 is how computers count. because they deal with bits, which are they only have two states, so on or off. And so there's this kind of marketing, what would you call it, scheme, I guess, ploy, that hard drive manufacturers have been using to make it look like they actually are selling you more storage than they are. So instead of selling you my hard drive.
Well,
is
that really true that it's a marketing ploy on their part?
I think so.
Because if you think of a gigabyte, mm-hmm. giga is a scientific notation for saying a billion. Mm-hmm. So a billion bytes, which is something that we normally think of. Whereas in the beginning of computer science, when they were dealing with a kilobyte of memory mm-hmm. in total, 1 kilobyte didn't really map out to a base 10, to a base 2 system.
Not exactly. It was 1,000 to 124.
Right. It became 1,024.
Or 1024. Yeah.
Yeah. 1,024 became a kilobyte because it was pretty close to 1,000, and so they call it a kilobyte.
Yeah.
But as you get to larger values of megabyte, gigabyte, instead of being, I believe it was something like 3% off or something like mm-hmm. that, they started growing, and now on the petabyte level or terabyte level, you're getting into like 10% different from mm-hmm. what you would expect.
So you buy a petabyte hard drive and you get 905 gigabytes or something.
No.
Or terabytes.
On the contrary, you get tibby bytes.
Yeah.
I have no idea what's going on right now.
That's a new one on me. Tibby bytes?
Yes.
Yeah, tibby bytes.
Right.
Tibby bytes.
Because those are referring to a base 2 system.
But those just sound silly.
Okay, so let us stop for a moment and kind of sum up for all our listeners is that we've got a company that is using differing numbering systems to make their products seem bigger than they actually are.
On the contrary.
And Miles is arguing the opposite.
For hundreds of years, we have referred to kilo and mega and the like as being 1,000 and 1,000,000 respectively.
Uh-huh.
Then maybe 15 years ago, computer scientists, because they're working with kilobytes, or they're working with memory base 2 systems uh-huh. instead of base 10, decided, oh, well, actually a kilobyte, 1024, it's close enough to 1,000, so we'll call that a kilobyte, even though it's not exactly 1,000. Mm-hmm. It's actually a little bit more.
And as we get into more and more storage in our hard drives and our data arrays, that small difference is being amplified.
Right. It's now a 10% difference.
Mm-hmm. Well,
and we'll become bigger.
And also a big deal here is that your computer typically is not going to show you the size of your drive the way that they're marketing it,
yeah.
which is the big problem mm-hmm. here.
So right. But is that a fault?
You install it in your hard drive and you go, why doesn't it say what I have?
Right.
I have?
But is that yeah. the fault of the hard drive manufacturers or the fault of the operating system vendors? There's the question. The hard drive manufacturers are saying this is a billion bytes. Or 1,000 billion bytes, or you know, a trillion bytes in the case of a terabyte drive. So why is it their responsibility for the fact that the operating system says, "Oh, well, we're going to do this in a base 2 system instead"?
But the words gigabytes and kibabytes and all of those bibytes are not. Most people don't know them. Only people who have really researched
right, but that doesn't
this.
Address why doesn't the operating system refer to it in a hard drive in a base 10 system.
They can.
Well, I think they have both.
There's
that
no
option.
Technical reason why they have to do that in a binary system, why they can't do it in a decimal system.
Yeah.
Let us summarize somehow, Ben.
Oh, put it on me.
Why did you bring this up?
Well, I brought this up originally. Going back to the root is Creative recently settled a class action lawsuit about the capacity of hard drives. And this exactly was the issue, is that they would market these drives as being 500 gigabyte drives, which, you know, Miles is making the apt point that technically, if you look at the word gigabyte or kilobyte or megabyte, it is 5 billion bytes. But
apparently the courts agree with the operating.
Yeah, the courts agree with the operating or with the
perspective.
Yes.
Okay, excellent. I think it's about time that we
absolutely confused everyone. Yes.
Yeah.
It's about time that we move on to our interview, I have to say. With us on the line, are all the geeks okay with that? Are we clear to move forward? Excellent. With us on the line is Patrick Nugent, a product manager for Roxio, which is a division of Sonic Solutions, and a leading provider of consumer and professional embedded CD and DVD authoring products, such as what we're going to be talking about today, Roxio Toast 9. Patrick, welcome to the show.
Well, thanks very much for having me. You guys sound like you're having fun.
We're having a great time, I'd like to think. Are we geeks?
Oh, sure.
I'd say so.
So, Patrick, I am really curious to ask you about a number of features on this Toast 9 product. It's very specific stuff that I want to know about. But before we get into that, could you give us a general overview? What is Toast 9 and why is it that people use it?
So Toast 9 is our latest and greatest CD, DVD, video, just about everything you're going to do with digital media that's not covered in iLife on the Mac. You know, why do people use Toast? You know, one of the reasons is we try and introduce things that, hey, they may not be available on the Mac. If they are available, they may not be done as well as they could be. You know, so we've introduced a whole bunch of cool things. Why would somebody use Toast 9? You know, we've added Blu-ray burning, Blu-ray authoring. You can finally burn Blu-ray videos on the Mac, some things like TV streaming and editing, some audio capture, and all sorts of goodies I'm sure we'll get to.
I'm actually curious, what do you think the uptake will be on Blu-ray drives to take advantage of this new the new feature set of your software? Right now they're pretty expensive.
Yeah, I think Blu-ray drives are in, you know, roughly the $400 to $500 range. But the good part about Toast 9 is we do something really cool. So let's say you have a high-definition movie, you have an HD or an AVC HD camcorder, and you've got this high-quality, high-def video. What do you do with it right now? You burn it to DVD, and you lose quality, or you compress it to another format. Well, with Toast 9, you can actually burn that to a DVD disc. So let's say you don't have a Blu-ray burner. You can burn it with your normal, your standard DVD burner, and play it in a Blu-ray player.
Well, that's pretty significant. So you don't actually have to have a Blu-ray burner to be able to burn Blu-ray quality media to a disc that you could then play in a Blu-ray player, is what you're saying.
Exactly.
Okay. Well, I want to talk about more about that and get to some other features of Roxio 9. But first, I just want to remind everybody that they're listening to KUSP. Central Coast Public Radio. And this is Geek Speak, which is supported by Henry J. Ramirez DDS in Santa Cruz, specializing in cosmetic and family dentistry using digital technology for less radiation and offering one appointment crowns and veneers. For appointments and more information, 423-2447. And stay with KUSP for Castle Cottage this morning at 11 a.m. on Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP.
KUSP co-sponsors the upcoming presentation of Three Penny Opera, opening May 9th through May 11th at the Pacific Cultural Center in Santa Cruz. Composer Kurt Weill and playwright Bertolt Brecht transform old-fashioned opera and operetta forms with sharp political perspective and the sound of 1920s Berlin dance bands and cabaret. Directed by Daniel Helfgott and music directed by Maya Barskat. For more information, go to scmusic.org or call 429-1973. Geek Speak on KUSP is supported by Business with Pleasure, a full-service business center in Scotts Valley offering computer rentals, printing, design, shipping, delivered office supplies, notary public, and more. Information is online at businesswithpleasure.com.
You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP. This is Geek Speak. I'm Timothy Jordan, filling in for Lyle Troxell. The geeks in the studio today are writer Brooks, Ben, and Miles. Our guest is Patrick Nugent, a product manager for Roxio. So, Patrick, I think this whole Blu-ray thing is really exciting for me. I'm a bit tentative, but excited at the same time to see Blu-ray come into more prominence in our marketplace and in our homes. I want to burn high-resolution DVDs. My brother's bachelor party is coming up, and I want to record embarrassing things and make sure that they stay in very good quality for the rest of all time.
Right, and this technology that you're talking about, this is similar to the idea of burning DVD-quality data onto a standard CD, like the video CD format of the past?
Absolutely, you know, very similar, sort of taken up to the next level. And, you know, we've been very excited about this, too. It's, I can't explain how great it is to work on a product that you're going to go home, you're going to use, and your family and friends are going to use.
So, excellent. I'd like to move into some of the other features that are really curious to me. Now, as many listeners will know, I don't have a TV. I iTunes everything. It's just something that I do. Not always on the Mac. Sometimes, you know, iTunes on the PC as well. And it gets pretty expensive. And I thought I'd keep continue doing it because it's just so versatile. It works on everything that I have. I can watch it anywhere. It's always on demand. But this whole TiVo thing also seems like a good idea if you do have a TV and you can TiVo your programs and watch them whenever you want. And that was cool, but not quite as cool as now with Toast 9. Apparently, you can stream your TiVo recorded programs to your iPhone wherever you are. I'm confused. Is that really true?
It's absolutely true. So you know what? If you're a TiVo user, and TiVo's got to be one of the best DVR implementations I've ever seen, and I've used a number of them from different cable companies. It's just the simplest and the most feature-rich DVR you've ever seen. And when you add Toast to that, you can now take your shows off of your DVR or off of your TiVo and store them on your computer, convert them for your iPod. Brand new in Toast 9, actually, we've added, mostly because of users asking us for this, the ability to remove unwanted segments of your show, actually trim them out. And then, of course, if you have an iPhone or an iPod Touch or even a Mac or a PC remotely, we make it really easy to access your video on your home computer.
Okay, well, let's. I want to geek out for a moment here. Tell me about the technology involved. What is? How do you connect your TiVo to your computer? What sort of protocols is it using? And then how does it actually stream it over the internet? I mean, my computer's at home behind a firewall on a wireless device. How is it that then I can watch that on my iPhone?
Okay, we're totally geeking out, right?
Yes.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, awesome. So first thing, how does your TiVo connect to your Mac? Very simple, wired or wireless internet. Most TiVos, you plug the Ethernet right in, or you pick up a wireless adapter.
And it's already set up that I could access my TiVo from my computer? TiVos are already set up for that.
As long as you install Toast, you get a program called TiVo Transfer, where you put in the media access key. It's sort of like a serial number for your TiVo, and then it will automatically see it and let you bring. It'll bring up a list of shows and then bring over the shows to your Mac.
How is the Mac to iPhone connection done exactly?
So the Mac to iPhone connection, I mean, there are many, many ways to share files. We went into this wanting to try and keep it simple. So we ask you two questions. When you start the program, it's called Streamer. So it's a separate, but it's part of Toast. So it comes in when you install Toast. You see a little icon called Streamer. It's a little TV with on a hand. We ask you for a short name. So what that means is you get to pick a name like Lyle, even though he's not here in his memory. And when you pick that short name, whenever you need to access your computer and you're not at home, you just go to streamer.rockco.com/ whatever name you've picked.
Okay, so you give everyone a subdomain on rockco.com.
Not a subdomain, but after the slash.
Oh, I see.
A directory.
I see. Streamer.rockco.com/.
Correct.
Ben or Lyle.
Right. And then what we do is we redirect them to their home computer where all the video is stored.
I see. And Streamer takes care of all of the back-end settings and protocoling.
Correct.
So you know, this isn't as difficult to set up as, say, I don't know, back to your Mac, is it?
I've had better luck with Streamer.
Okay. I mean, geeks, you know about this whole back to your Mac thing, which is
actually
the easiest to set up thing in the world.
I don't have a .Mac account, so I don't haven't delved.
Well, I mean, the way it's been going, the wide reception is that it can be difficult if you've got a connection that's not all Apple or just a little bit strange to the internet, then setting up back to your Mac can just be the most painful thing in the world.
Yeah. So what we're talking about here with the iPhone and that is that you're going through a URL. You're going through iPhone Safari interface to
correct.
Access a web
page. Correct. So what you're doing on the iPhone is you're launching Safari, or, you know what, if you have a Mac or a PC on the internet, load your web browser. Go to that URL. you get it. You enter your password that you've entered once when you launch Streamer the very first time, and you get a listing of your shows and the descriptions of the shows and how long they are, and then you can watch.
And I'm assuming this interface can also be used with any PC. It's just a web interface, so any computer could use this, or is this specific to the iPhone? Are you reformatting the screen to do for the iPhone screen?
You know what? It's optimized for the iPhone, iPod Touch, but you can open it in any browser, Mac, PC, Vista. I've done it on Vista, as long as you have QuickTime installed.
Doing stuff on Vista.
Sorry.
Don't be sorry. It's foreign to me. Excellent. Well, geeks.
Yeah, that turns out, like, in the geek room, we don't have any geeks that know Vista anymore. This is sad.
We all jump ship.
I tried with Vista, but it's like just basic things that you would know how to do in XP. Well, no, they've moved around, and I don't know how to do them anymore.
You know, as a community service, I'm thinking I may have to put on Vista just so I can
really
just so we can talk with folks. I mean, we're giving advice to folks over the air.
That's
mm-hmm.
a good point.
Have some knowledge about what's going on.
Yeah, I'm still running XP. And I have no plans to change. I don't think I can run Vista on my home PC. It's like 2 months too early of a hardware. Aww. Anyway, geeks, what do we have any other questions for Patrick about Toast 9 or about burning or about the DVD? We could talk about the AVC-HD encoding or what
I'm sorry, AVC?
So this is something that I forgot to mention when we were talking about
the
burning
video
the
conversion.
Blu-ray on DVD. Sony has their own encoding for that. It's the AVC-HD. It's the reason why some Sony cameras don't work with early versions of iMovie because they weren't patched for it.
Oh.
So it's this fancy HD format. Isn't that right, Patrick?
Yeah, it's a derivative of the actual Blu-ray disc format. But all we're doing is, you know, we're taking that and putting it on a DVD so any Blu-ray player just sees it as a movie.
So I had a question. When you were talking about burning Blu-rays on traditional DVD media,
mm-hmm.
Obviously there would be a length restriction that you a much shorter amount of video that you could put on a standard DVD with, but is it a Blu-ray? Because I thought that Blu-ray was it was specific to Blu-ray media to that data density, but is it more of a burning protocol that is being utilized that can be generalized to any media? Like, could you conceivably burn it on a CD, albeit you'd only be able to put a minute or something or 2 minutes, but.
In theory, even though you could actually put, you know, that minute on a CD, Blu-ray player would never play it.
Really? But it would off of a DVD?
Correct. It will off of a DVD, you know, and not, you know, even programs on the, you know, on the Windows side that burn these to Blu-ray discs, it actually takes a little bit more work to format it so it'll work from a DVD.
Why is that?
So the standards for Blu-ray... So, you know, there's these hundreds of pages, these guides of, mm-hmm. you know, every little bit of the disc has to be in a certain way so the Blu-ray player knows what to expect.
Mm-hmm.
If it's formatted in this normal way that, you know, say your Hollywood movie is formatted, the player won't know what to do with the disc. And that's where the AVCHD format steps in and says, okay, you can do it on DVD, but you have to do this, 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 and this.
But do you know, like, the technical reason for this? Would this be the header information for high definition is bigger than 600 megabytes?
It's actually a check for media type.
So, huh. But Blu-ray players will play Redbook audio, will they not? That your sort of standard CD audio?
Correct. Most of them will play audio CDs. Most of them will play and possibly even upscale DVD video. But okay. It's actually against the spec to play these, you know, if you were to say, you were asking about high def on a CD. It's not part of the spec, so when the Blu-ray player goes to check, hey, is this a Blu-ray disc? No, it's not. It would just stop right there.
What is, I mean, seriously, I'm curious what the reason, rationale behind that was. Do you know?
No, I don't, unfortunately. Mm. You know, that's a question for the manufacturers.
I mean, admittedly, 1 minute or 3 minutes of video is hardly
yeah, but
compelling
it's
to folks. And DVD, blank DVDs are cheap, so I guess that might have been it.
As we all know, I mean, being geeks, it's not always about actually wanting to do it, but being able to do it, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know? Yeah. And just sort of, we could jump on the other end of the spectrum of this particular topic of versatility. I think that's what interests me about Toast 9 and about a number of products that I'd sort of like to talk about, is that what is so cool about versatility in technology, to being able to see something anywhere, be able to use something anywhere, to be able to upload your bookmarks to the web and get them from another computer, to have your videos and your files accessible from anywhere. I think this is where we're going. And I'd like to talk about that a little bit, but I also want to, before we get in there, is to open up the phones. Patrick, I hope you'll stay with us as we take calls from Santa Cruz and beyond. Anyone, you can ask us anything. This is Geek Speak, and we like to talk geek. So call us up. The phone numbers are 476-2800. That's 476-2800. Or toll free at 800-655-5877. That's 800-655-5877. You can ask us anything about what we've been talking about this hour or any other questions that you need help with. So geeks, what is are we going to see increasingly this smart technology that's available everywhere and versatility and everything? Or do we think that there's always going to be a battle between corporate control and the versatility and freedom we get with our technology?
That's a fine question.
I think you'll see both.
Yeah.
I mean, there will always be battles with you know, the media producers and trying to control their content, mm-hmm. yeah, from spreading out there. But there's no stopping this. I mean, there's always circumvention to whatever restrictions they put in place. But if you just look at the technology, I mean, you have the Sling Box, you have TiVo, you had Replay, you know, all these different technologies that have been out there and are continuing to come out there that, you know, add flexibility and mobility of our content. It's just going to keep getting better and better, I think.
But at the same time, it's how much are people going to pay for convenience? Most people will pay for convenience. And then geeks are going to have the do-it-yourself, the do-it-yourselfer mm-hmm. ethic. But then, you know, the paying for the convenience, that's what Toast is paying for convenience.
Yeah. I mean, the thing about Toast is you do get sort of this company, this large company that produces software that a lot of people buy and use, actually grabbing on to this versatility train and providing that for their customers. And so I think that even corporations can benefit from pushing that technology. Would you agree with that, Patrick?
Absolutely. I think, you know, one of the comments we often hear from users are that, you know, I don't want to do one thing with my media or my video. I want to be able to do everything with my video. And mm-hmm. we try to enable that.
Excellent. So we're going to get to your phone calls in just a few moments. Keep those numbers in your mind. Dial them right now and ask us your questions. The number in the studio is 476-2800 or toll free at 800-655-5877. You are listening to Geek Speak on KUSP. My name is Timothy Jordan, filling in for Lyle Troxell. The geeks this morning are Ben Jaffe, Miles Elam, and Ryder Brooks. Our guest is Patrick Nugent, a product manager for Roxio. So let's go ahead and get right to the phones, shall we? On line one, we have Olin. Let's see if I can get him actually online. Olin, are you there from Ascadero?
Good morning.
Now, you're having a problem with your registry.
Well, yeah, I keep having this pop out on my monitor that says I should contact www.registryfix.com or fixregistry.com. Well, or help fix.
I can tell you right now, you got some malware on your system.
And what is malware?
Malware is kind of software that gets loaded up inadvertently through web browsers or downloading software that basically does a variety of things. In this case, you know, it's popping up advertising for you to go to their website and order their software, which may in itself be you know, something you download and might further infect your system, or it might just be something that they're trying to sell. Question is whether this is popping up from his browser going to a website, or if this is coming up running an application, or just popping up, you know, while he's not doing anything. So, Olin, is this while you're browsing a website that you're getting this?
No, I'm on some website checking something else, and this Windows keep. I'm using Firefox, Mozilla, and I just keep getting this Windows constantly. Mm-hmm.
Does it ever appear when you're not browsing the internet?
No.
Okay. So this is probably either something that's either infected your browser and is doing this, or is specifically a site that you're looking at. Is it one site that you're having a problem with,
no,
or any
it's
site?
No, different sites.
Okay. And you're running a Windows PC?
Yes, a Windows PC.
Okay. I would probably recommend that you scan your system for malware and see if you can get it cleaned up off your box.
Do we have any recommended malware scans?
SpyBot Search and Destroy would be the best case for this.
Which one is that?
SpyBot Search and Destroy.
I'll be putting up a link to that on our website. So if you go to geekspeak.org a little bit after the show, you can find a link to download the software. It's free to use, and then you can run the scan on your system after you install.
All right.
Thanks for calling
us. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Excellent. And next up, we'd like to talk to Penny from Gilroy. Penny, you're having some TiVo issues.
Yes, I do. I was on vacation. I came back, and my husband, the day I come back, says we have a problem with TiVo, which we have a old, probably about 4 or 5 year old Sony TiVo that's connected to DirecTV, and we haven't had any problems. But it kept powering up. We would get the powering up message, 5 minutes, and then it would look like it was, you'd see a flash of color, like, oh, it's going to go onto the screen, and then it would power up again. So we read the directions, and it looked like, well, maybe we had our VCR connected. So it appeared that we did, so I pushed that down. Well, that helped the TiVo, because now it would power up, and you could watch TV for maybe 2 or 3 minutes before it powered up again. So then I felt it, and it felt hot. I thought, oh, maybe it's a heat issue. So I put something that, you know, would allow it to be off the piece of wood that it was on and allow air to circulate, and it cooled down. And that seemed to help. We got up to 8 minutes before it would power up. And then I thought, well, maybe the wires are kinked, you know, the leads that come in. So I raised it up a little more. Well, we're now up to 11 to 15 minutes, depending on the time of day. And I hate to get a new one because when I looked it up on the internet, it sounded like there were going to be some DirecTV issues with the HD TV, which we do not have. So does anyone have any suggestions other than just keep waiting and seeing if it actually fixes itself?
It definitely sounds like an overheating problem to me.
Yeah. I'm amiss to say too much because I don't actually have a TiVo issue. Yeah. Those of us that have TiVos, Patrick, I'm sure you have like three. what are overheating issues? Is that a problem with TiVos?
You know, I've never heard of an overheating issue with TiVo, but think of a TiVo as a small computer. It has a hard drive inside, has a processor, it has some video out or a video that goes to the TV. I mean, I could imagine there'd be heat issues, but if it was working for many years, nothing's changed, and all of a sudden it's restarting every 7 or 8 minutes now, it's probably something that, you're not going to be able to have an effect on, something you're probably going to have looked at and maybe fixed or replaced.
Right. Well, that's what I was afraid of. When I called originally and told them, they said, oh, it's dead, basically, you know, get a new one. But when it seemed like it was repairing itself, I kept thinking, well, maybe there's some other possibility in terms of, I don't know, wiring or something. Why would it get better? Is that what, I mean, because I've never had a hard drive, knock on wood, go out. So do they actually get better even, you know, by themselves, sort of not completely better, but partially better? Like if, you know, if the heat gets better, do they kind of just work a little more efficiently?
Heat can cause intermittent functionality.
Yeah. This actually reminds me of a call that we had a few weeks ago where a customer had a laptop that he was trying to fix some sort of circuit problem, and it was relating to expansion of the materials inside the circuit board. And he put some wedge in there to jerry-rig so the heat expansion wouldn't affect it, power cycling or powering off. So that's kind of why I think that this is, I mean, especially since you say that you've elevated it and you let it breathe some more, that's positively impacting it. So, I mean, if you actually, you know, reverse that and undo that change and it goes down again, that then I say you have a direct correlation with the heat problem. Whether that's your hard drive or some circuitry on the motherboard on that TiVo is the question at this point. One of the things that I would want to know is, okay, I don't have a TiVo myself, but I have a Replay TV, and you know, it's a computer. It needs to be cooled off. It has power supplies. There's a fan in there. Has that fan gone out?
Oh, that's a thought. I had never thought of that.
So once you listen and see if you hear a fan going off, the fan could have failed, or it could have gotten dirty and gunked up. You know, maybe you could just blow it out with an air compressor, you know, a portable air compressor. And
oh, okay.
Clear some
so
gunk
I would basically
out of there.
Take undo all the pieces
yeah.
and open it up yeah. somehow.
I'd take it
someone to open it up, not yeah. myself.
Yeah, definitely. If you're not comfortable with that, you could probably void the warranty opening up the case. But
I think so, because it seems. Of course, it doesn't matter because this is old. I don't think in four yeah. or 5 years I'm going to have a warranty yeah. left.
I probably don't think it's a hard drive. Hard drives typically don't behave that way in terms of
yeah.
failures.
No,
they make noises and they grind to a halt, or they slow your media's, you know, presentation down because it's missing bits and trying to recover. So I don't think it's a hard drive problem.
So our solution for Penny is she needs to take it to someone or replace it.
Do you have any recommendations for the kind of person I would take it to?
My first guess would be Santa Cruz Electronics, but they'd just be hacking around at it like I would imagine.
Yeah, but they would also have a lot of supplies to do that.
They'd have stuff.
If you want to just have them just check the fan and clean the dust out, you could just take it to any TV appliance store.
Oh, okay. So, but I mean, I'm thinking.
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, you know, computer stores.
Like Best Buy or somebody like that, they don't do this.
No, they're mm-hmm. not going to touch that.
So I need to find somebody
other
local
that deals with electronics
kind of
on a repair
does.
Level is who you want to talk to.
Okay, yeah. Well, that's great. Thank you so much.
Sure.
Yeah. Okay. Excellent.
Thanks for calling, Penny.
Okay.
Great
Bye.
Hearing about your troubleshooting
process. Yes, my husband was very impressed, let me tell you.
that's a good way to
keep that marriage strong. I have a friend who's a mechanic, and he told me, he says, well, I think it sounds like it's dead. You should get a new one. And this is a person who never gives up on anything, and he's also impressed that I've pursued this. So. Yeah.
You know,
thank
could
you
call
very
direct.
Much.
DirecTV, and then maybe they can help you out with that.
No,
as
they're
well.
The ones who told me it was dead.
All right. Well, good luck with that, Penny.
Thanks for calling.
And over in Watsonville, we have Judith on the line who would like to know about getting CDs into iTunes.
Well, I can import the CDs into iTunes. What I'm trying to do is I have a friend who has a radio show, and I posted a couple of his shows online.
Don't we all?
and they were, but they those two shows came as, you know, one track on a CD that he gave me. And he has some other shows that are like 10 tracks. And I didn't know whether there's any way I could consolidate those 10 tracks in a simple way into one track.
Oh, I don't think you can do it with iTunes.
I don't know whether you can do that in iTunes yeah. or if I have to maybe do that. I have
what,
a Mac.
What format are these? Are these MP3s or the...
I've imported them as MP3s. I mean, I think I can...
And you want to maintain
iTunes,
that.
I can import them as different things.
Okay, well, I think we should give her a list of sort of general tools that we might use, and we should also give Patrick his say.
I have a quick question. Are you ripping these from a CD, or are they from a computer and you're dragging them into iTunes?
He gave me a CD, and then I import them to iTunes. And
they're separate files, and you want to make them one big file.
Yeah.
One big file.
Okay.
Do you have a Mac or a PC?
I have a Mac.
One program, actually, it's actually Windows and Mac, is called Audacity, and it's free. And you can use that. What I would recommend personally is open up the CD, which pops up on your desktop. Just open that up. Don't even bring iTunes into this. And just drag all of these files off onto your actual computer, off of the CD onto maybe a folder in your desktop.
Uh-huh.
And then you can open up each of these files in Audacity, and you can copy and paste them into one long file. And then when you're done with that, you can export it from Audacity and then bring it into iTunes, and you'll have that whole long...
Okay, so I would have to set up my preferences for for importing CDs, or I just, when it's asked about iTunes, I say no.
Yes, when asked about iTunes, say no, and do it manually. You can just double-click on your CD, and it'll pop up with a whole list of tracks. And if you just drag them right out of your CD, then OS X will automatically preserve the data. Because what you want to avoid is compressing it to an MP3 and then modifying it with Audacity, which is going to uncompress it again, and then recompressing it. You want to avoid that as much as possible. You want to make sure
you'll
keep
quality.
Exactly. Keep all of your quality and your data until the final stage when you have what you want to compress into iTunes.
Great. And I think we should also give Patrick an opportunity to talk about how Toast could help in the situation.
Well, I was going to say what you guys suggested is pretty cool. Sounds great. As a Toast user, one of the ways I could do it is to tap into the new feature in Toast 9 where you can record anything you hear, and you can just play back this audio and just record it as one long file.
But then you have to listen.
I want to avoid having to play the file out loud and record it like on GarageBand or something. I mean, I have something that I can do that, but there's background noise. The phone might ring and then I have to edit. And so I'm hoping to do it electronically
Toast actually does electronically. When I said record what you hear, any sound that's coming out of a web page or a program or a CD player, like iTunes, it actually records not from the microphone, but actually what's playing on your Mac.
Oh, okay. Well, that's what, yeah.
Right. That requires re-encoding it still, though, right, because it's taking just the raw digital output.
I don't think it would. It's just exploiting the analog loophole, which is an interesting read on Wikipedia, I'm sure.
Yeah. Now, Judith, there are programs out there that can edit MP3 files directly, and you can merge, join them, separate them without having to decode them or re-encode them back into a wave, which is the typical CD native format. So you could also look out there. I'm sure there's lots of freeware, shareware out there. Just search on MP3, join,
merge.
And
what would the keywords?
I would search on MP3, merge, join, and audio.
Okay.
Yeah. I got a bunch of hits just trying that right now.
All right, Judith. Well, it looks like your solution is to perhaps check out Audacity. Also, Toast 9 might have some features that you'd enjoy. Or you could do a web search to find some small utilities that are free out there that could do exactly what you want.
Okay, great. Thank you so much.
And we'll put up a link on geekspeak.org, too.
We sure will.
Those things. Oh, that would be great. Thank you so much.
Thank you for calling. So this has been Geek Speak for Saturday, May 3rd, 2008, on the Central Coast of California. Our guest in the studio today was Patrick Nugent, a product manager for Roxio. Patrick, thanks for joining us.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Our geeks in the studio were Miles Elam.
It still is Miles Elam, thank you.
Ryder Brooks.
We're still here.
Bye-bye.
And Ben Jaffe.
GeekSpeak's a registered service mark of Online Tonight with David Lawrence and is used by permission.
You just listened to another episode of GeekSpeak via our podcast. Would you do us a favor? Please go to your favorite podcasting index site, whether it be iTunes, Dig.com, Odeo, or another site, and write a review or give us a vote to let others know what you think about GeekSpeak. Thanks, that'd really help us out. GeekSpeak is supported by PreownedCar.com, PreownedCar.com, where anyone can post their vehicle for sale or browse to purchase a pre-owned car from other car owners. More information available at PreownedCar.com. This is Lyle Troxell for KUSP. Thanks for listening.